Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fireworks Podcast. My name is Jesse Dan Yusuf and I am your host. On this podcast, we talk about stories and insights from the world of creativity and entrepreneurship and just the business of creativity. I'm excited about this episode because we get to listen to a friend, Salem King. Now, Salem is a teacher, a content creator, and an all-around amazing guy. This episode was recorded in front of a live audience at Campfire earlier on this year. I hope you enjoy it. At the end of the episode, can you consider subscribing, rating this episode, and sharing with your friends? We will really love to get that feedback. All right, listen to Salem. Said I will moderate. I'll ask Salem questions, then we can ask him questions later on. Just know Campfire is about networking, it's about learning, it's about community. Thank you very much. So I'm honored to call upon my friend, brother. He's a teacher, he's a community builder, creator, thinks he's funny. He is one. TEDx speaker and the Future Awards nominee. Please, can we welcome Salem King Ibrahim? Okay, so we'll just go through it. Usually, for those of us that this is our first time, Campfire used to be about three speakers. We're honored to have one king, like Salem is sharing. No one. So I ask, is there need for more introduction? We should just go right into it. Okay. So the question I usually ask, or at every event, the first question I ask is about, you know, failure. What has failure taught you, or what have you learned about failure? What's the biggest thing that you've learned about failure?
I guess the fact that no one can escape it, right? And like, if you haven't failed, just keep living. And you know, if you failed before, it's not the worst thing that can happen to you. I noticed that like there's a way in which you can fail at one thing in one area, like you pursue one project and it goes terribly bad. But everything you learn from how badly that went, you're able to apply to something else, like 5 years down the line, or 2 years down the line, or 6 months if you're lucky. And it just goes so well, like it just fits in perfectly, like that failure prepared you for something you didn't know you were preparing for. So there's something that I do sometimes when I have a really bad day, me and my manager. Like when we have a really bad day or we plan to do something and it doesn't go as planned, we just laugh and be like, our story goes sweet there. You know, because we've all lived long enough to know that there's so much that doesn't make sense in the moment going through it. It makes sense looking backwards. And that's something that I've learned about failure. I still like it. You know how people be like, I love to fail, but I don't love to fail. Like. Yeah, so that has remained the same for me over the years. I hate failure, but it doesn't really matter what you like or what you hate, you know. It's what are you trying to do and what do you have to go through to get the results you want. And failure is just one of those things.
And you're absolutely right, you know. I think let's just also go to 2020. You know, for most people, I won't say for everyone, for many people, last year was interesting. So many people lost loved ones. So many people lost businesses. What did the pandemic teach you about, you know, what all that you do, being a creative, being a content creator, being an entrepreneur? You know, what did last year teach you?
Last year taught me how important it is to adapt, and I think it taught everybody that, yeah. But the level on which it was, you know, what's the word now? The level on which it was memorable for me, or like was really important to me personally, was I learned how that it's important to be able to move on fast, right? And when I say move on fast, we only talk about moving on from like negative stuff, right? When something bad happens to you, get up, move on fast. But this is like being able to move on from something that went well, right? Like, we all need to be able to move on, because the dynamic of business everywhere in the world changed because of COVID. Like, there were entire industries that just did not exist anymore because of the pandemic, like travel, events, gone, right? So it was a situation where everybody was forced to like adapt in a way that even if there was something that was going so well for you, you had to move on from your attachment to how good you were at it. And then there were like luxury fashion brands that were now making face masks. Do you understand? And like, we laugh, but that was not, it's not a downgrade. It was them evolving, right? And there are many ways in which me too, I had to evolve. I'm an introvert, so I loved the evolution. I didn't have to go anywhere. I could do all my work online and all. But yeah, that was it for me. The fact that I had to evolve and move on from the things that had gone well. So like physical classes, events, like I was just starting to speak at events and then no more events, you know, and everybody had to move on from their successes. Like, I was good at this. People recognized me for this, but I can't do it anymore. What else can I do to continue to serve people, even if it's not this other thing that used to make my ego really huge? Yeah.
Okay, so just speaking about certain economies that disappeared, right? But we saw kind of like a rise in what is now called the passion economy or the creator economy. Of course, it's kind of always been there, but because everybody was now online or migrating, you know, to the internet, so we saw a lot of people, we saw platforms rise up, we saw new celebrities, we saw new influencers and creators. Exactly. So this whole thing about the creator economy is something I've been learning and teaching about. For people that are here that are probably in the position or are thinking of how to transition from a job they hate, or just trying to navigate the future, how can I make more money? Naira is crashing, you understand? All those things. How they've heard about these things, and how can they take advantage of the passion economy, or how can they take advantage of the creator economy?
That's a really interesting question. I think the first thing anyone would need to do is to not take it for granted, because there are so many people that took this industry for granted, and the millions of dollars that enter creators' pockets in the past 1 year. But it didn't happen to people who were like, oh, there's money in this thing, oh, let's jump in. It happened to people who had been preparing for this and didn't know they were preparing for something, right? So they were like, when the pandemic hit, they were in the perfect position to like cash out properly, right? And so for anybody who's trying to get into this, I think it's important to first not take it for granted, to know that, oh, this is not just this thing the kids are, this thing that the kids have made cool now, let me jump into it. No, you're entering and in, you're starting, you're getting into something that will actually position your business differently than before. You're going to have to, if you're a business person, you might have to hire, right? Like, hire other people who know what you don't know, and not just say, it's not to post, we go run them. You're not going to run nothing. You're going to run your business into the ground. So it's important to find people that understand what you do not understand about the landscape. Social media managers, influencers, creators, copywriters, you know, there's so many jobs in this space, in this sphere, that you cannot afford to take for granted. Also, don't come in because this thing is now, how do I put it? Don't come in because it's a trend. Come in with a lot of clarity about what it is you want to achieve by being there. It's important for it to be a means to an end. Otherwise, two things will happen. You will get lost because it's so fast moving. Social media is so fast moving. At this point, this is just my opinion, but I don't even think people should call themselves social media experts. Because, like, you're an expert today, 6 months from now, Do you understand? The algorithm is entirely different from what it was at the time when you were saying that you were an expert. And so, coming knowing this is what I want to achieve, social media, you know, this creator space, it's a means to an end. It's important for you to be very sure of what your end is, because being a creator as its own thing is not a very healthy end, right? It's a healthy form of expression for like somebody who's not a business person, or maybe you're an influencer, a freelancer. It's a good way to like express, but over time it has to transition from expression to like, what am I trying to achieve with this? What other end? Because when I'm no longer a big thing, when I'm no longer popping, when I'm no longer having so many followers, what is it that's going to remain? What am I building, you know, actually? Because social media is also like rented space in a lot of ways. Anything can. You can just wake up one morning and your account has been hacked and it's gone. Or you've been shadow banned. So many things can happen. So it's important that as you are there, you know, this is why I am here. This is what I am trying to build. And you need to always be measuring to make sure that your presence on social media is building, like is directing sales or whatever it is, or eyes or traffic to whatever the other thing is that you're building. So that's my suggestion.
I think that's, I will just segue into that line of thought of building on platforms, because some people think it's just about gaining numbers, you understand, but there's something you do beautifully, which is community building, you know. And I had this theory of, for you to build a community, you should kind of treat it like a village. So when I speak to people that ask questions about how to build an audience or build a community. And that's the thing, some people don't know the difference between an audience or a community. But the notion you spoke about, rented space, just for the sake of people here, can we just talk about that a bit? You know, I was speaking to a friend of mine who is an artist, and I was telling him, say Spotify disappears, say Instagram disappears, how will you reach your community? You know? I will want you to kind of like speak on that and just share thoughts as well.
So something recently happened to a friend of mine. He's a musician. He's pretty big. He lost his YouTube channel. I didn't know that was possible. Of streams. I'm like, what? How do you lose your YouTube channel? And like, it's not like Instagram. If you lose your Instagram, Instagram doesn't pay you, but YouTube pays you. Like, they directly give you money. And then you just wake up one morning and it's not there anymore. So, and if you check, like, he now has a mailing list. All this stuff is strategic. Because ultimately, what the commodity is in the social media space or as a content creator, the commodity is attention. Right? And it's important to have top of mind awareness with people on more than one level. So I post my videos, for example, primarily on Instagram. I don't really like Twitter. I don't have thick skin. But I post my videos on Twitter and I run away, because I know that if anything happens on Instagram, my videos are on Twitter. On Twitter, I don't really get a lot of engagement. So some days it's 50,000 views, then the next can be 2,000 views. It's so unpredictable, yeah? But I prefer Instagram. Instagram is like predictable. But with all this, I have a mailing list. For example, I started a podcast at the beginning of this year. The podcast is only available to members of my mailing list. Now, like I said, because the commodity is attention, there has to be like levels that people, there has to be levels of attention and value that people get from you based on what it is they are investing as members of your community. So here's what I mean. My Instagram is free. Anybody can just open it from their phone. They get everything. My videos are free to watch. My podcast, you have to be a part of my mailing list to get access to that. So those people who have taken an extra step of commitment, it's easier for me to sell to them, right? Because they already want to listen to me. On Instagram, I'm not so sure. So it's important to understand that the commodity is attention, and you need to keep the attention of people on so many levels. Because ultimately, what you're trying to maintain is access to the hearts and minds of people. And platforms are fickle. Like, you can have it and you don't have it again. One of the places that I am always sure I have the attention of a number of people is my mailing list. Because they are sending me emails, I'm talking to them. You know, it's not like DMs where you want to keep the messages short and all. In my email, people will send me like, oh my God. It's stressful. But I know if it's 200 people I have in my mailing list, those 200 people are 200 people. On social media, I have 30-something thousand followers. On a good day, I get 500 comments. Where is everybody else? Jigga. And to some people, I have really good engagement. But I have 30,000 followers. So there are people that have even 100K, and they don't even have 20 or 30 comments. To understand that, I'm repeating this again, the commodity is attention. You need to hold so many different levels, and don't expect everybody to be there. Find a way to give premium value to a small percentage of your audience. The way Seth Godin says, he says, find a way to focus on your smallest viable audience. He said, to appeal to everyone, you end up appealing to no one, right? So even when you have an audience, it's important to know that the people that, out of my audience of 30K, the people that pay me money are less than 1,000.
Or the drama or whatever, right? Mark, Jack, whoever is building the next block, they can wake up and pack up. Guys, can you remember what Vine used to be around? The other day, I remembered Kick. Who can remember Kick? Big people on Kick, where are they now?
Only a few of them were able to transition.
Very few from Vine and Kick. No, transition even to YouTube and Instagram.
Yeah.
The rest, they are on the ground level with us. Well, not. So for people that are looking to get into the creator economy, honestly, it's not just a type of Salem King, right? I saw an online course on goat herding. I'm telling you, last night, she's making thousands of dollars. So it's crazy what you can do with the internet. Now I want us to speak about something about imposter syndrome.
Hark, hark, hark.
Have you ever faced something like that?
If you don't,
how do you overcome it? And
first of all, I don't think you overcome it. I think it overcomes you. Then you find a way to get back up. So just for the sake of, I mean, I know you guys are sophisticated and everything, but let's just define imposter syndrome for no good reason. So imposter syndrome is this thing where you feel like you're a fraud, and when you experience success, you feel like it happened by luck and you cannot replicate it. So when you put out a piece of content, sorry, I'm speaking from a point of content creator, because like that's all that happens in my brain. So you put out a piece of content and everybody's like, oh my gosh, I love this, and you're just like, lies. You love it because you don't know about my flaws. You love it because you don't know that I procrastinated for 7 days before I could put out this post about how to stop procrastinating. You know, and you just beat yourself up and you don't believe compliments. Like, you could even be getting an award and you'd be like, they did not find this other person. That's why they are giving because I'm in Abuja. You know, so that's basically what imposter syndrome is. And it happens to everybody. But why I like imposter syndrome, not experience, I don't like experiencing it. I like the concept of it. Is the fact that you can only experience imposter syndrome when you have experienced a level of success. So if you have imposter syndrome, if you feel like an imposter, it means you are in a good position, but you feel like you don't deserve the position.
So the good part is you're in a good position to begin with. There are people that don't have imposter syndrome. They are not there yet. Do you understand? So you see that imposter syndrome is a high quality problem. Life is I strongly believe that life is a series of problems. You cannot eradicate problems. The introduction of, you know, the solution to one problem introduces another one. That's just how life is. If your problem is that I'm single, I want a girlfriend. When you have a girlfriend, you have new problems. You know, you say, oh, I'm single, I want to get married, I don't like living alone. When you are sharing your space with another human being, you say you want... The point I'm trying to make is in every stage of life, there's problems. And the one thing we should be trying to do, rather than eradicating our problems, is to get to a point where we prefer our current problems. Right? So we're constantly increasing the quality of our problems. Like we can look back and say, okay, these were the problems I had. These are the problems I have. I prefer my current problems. Right? Like sometimes I miss when I had a job and I used to get monthly salary. Especially December last year, I was really broke. I'm like, man, that bonus will bang right now. But I didn't have any bonus. The only bonus I could get was the one I would get if I go and teach class. You know? And I preferred my current problems. I don't want to go back to my job, but I just think about it like, eh. But I prefer my current problems. And so, imposter syndrome is not going to go away. Like, you're going to keep experiencing it. It's going to keep happening. I got nominated for the Future Awards. I'm like, how come? Where did they find me? You know, all those questions, stupid questions. I was nominated. You can't take it back. But why am I here thinking, how did I get nominated? Maybe because this one. Maybe, you know, and you're trying to discredit your own self. Another thing about imposter syndrome I like, Seth Godin, father, not too far like that. I'm old. So the way he puts it, he says, if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, it's okay because you're an imposter. Because you're trying to do something that you've not done before. You're trying to be someone that you are not. You're an imposter. And it's okay that you're feeling imposter syndrome because you're sort of a fraud, right? Because if you start a business, if you start a business and you've never had clients, when you're getting your first client and you're telling him what you can do, can you really do it? So the client is really taking a chance on you. Do you understand? And you're also taking a chance on yourself. And with that will come a lot of negative emotions. And it's normal, right? So I think me, I've accepted that imposter syndrome doesn't really go away. If I learn that it does go away, I'll ask Jesse to invite me to campfire so that I'll recant this statement. But at this point in my learning journey, this is how I feel about imposter syndrome.
Love it. So this is also making me think about something I learned recently. I don't know if you've heard about the Matthew effect.
No, I haven't.
So a sociologist basically theorized, actually from a saying in the Bible by Jesus, where Jesus said, to whom has much more will be given to him, and who has will be taken. So basically, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. So he tested this theory across different, this sociologist person tested it across different spheres and sectors and saw that it was true. Scientists that got funding for their research, they got funding because they were already successful. People got awards and opportunities for the different things because they were already successful at what they were getting. And they tested it in education, and they saw that children of the rich were obviously more, they got richer and they had more opportunities in life because they were already at a point where they had the opportunity, they had the privilege, they had the advantage. You know, so, but there is a way to beat it, right? So, you know, as you started out where
you just said your goal was not to, at least from what I can remember, your goal was not to get the future award, was not to, unless you want to confess now. No. But when you started in 2019, all you said you wanted to do was to put out the put out a piece of content every day for 30 days. And you're doing this now. So clearly we can see an example of the Matthew effect working, right? What would you say about something like that? You know, the Matthew effect, about people that have an advantage are getting more advantages or are already opportunities, but they're getting more opportunities, right? For people that are here and are looking to probably start or are experiencing imposter syndrome or have slowed down or whatever, right? What would you say to something like that?
Yeah, so every time somebody tells me I can't start because I don't have this, I don't listen to them. Because I feel like come borrow. Right? So I believe the thing. When I used to read that verse of the one that has more will be given to him, and the one that doesn't have what they have will be taken. I'm like, it's not fair. Like, it don't add up, you know? But as I grew up, I understood that there's a sense in which we have what we need, but we have to become conscious of the fact that we have what we need to attract it. Right? So every now and then I tell myself that I have everything I need. I don't really have everything I need physically, but I believe that I have everything I need. So this is a perfect time for me to tell my story. Enough of the aspire to perspire. So a lot of people don't know this, but when I first started making, I didn't start making videos in 2019. I started making videos 2017-ish. And when I started making videos, I didn't have an iPhone. I had like a cheap Samsung phone, and I learned how to edit videos from YouTube. But when I would make videos on my phone and edit, I didn't like how they looked. It was not like the one I was seeing in the expo videos. So I kept putting them out, but I would only put them on like my stories, Instagram stories, where they would disappear after 24 hours, no commitment, you know, fantastic. Only like 20 something people would see it. It worked for me. And then at some point, I wanted to make the videos better. I don't know where the idea came from, but I now started to desaturate the video. So like, I'll just take the saturation to zero. So the black and white. And when the videos were black and white, the quality was still shabby, but it now looked artsy. You get like grain and stuff. It now looks like I knew what I was doing, you know. And I kept putting out those videos. It was black and white. There was not that person that was making videos and putting them black and white, because nobody would think to put videos. Like, why would you get? Like, it was absurd. And I just kept doing that. And later on, when I saved some money, got an iPhone, it just kind of stuck. You get? So I'm like, okay, I'll just keep putting videos out in black and white. After that time, like 4 months after that time, was when I decided to make videos every day for 30 days. And all those videos were black and white. So it was like, this new kid on the block, his stuff is white and black. I did not have good phone. But people don't know that, yeah? And I don't feel like they have to know. I'll tell them not good. But you guys are here, so you know this story now. And it just went on like that. I just kept putting out everything in white and black. And it was... I think it just worked for me, especially because of the kind of content I was putting out. And I was making them in my bedroom. I was living with my parents at the time. So you couldn't see the color of the wall or the color of my bed sheets. Just focus on my face and what I'm saying. So it worked. And I just kept doing that. And that's where I am now. So now when creators come to me and they're like, oh, I don't have this, I don't have... And I tell them, does your friend have... Can you borrow from your friend for 30 minutes a week? Right? Is that something you can do? Yeah. You don't have a ring light. Oh my God, interesting story. The ring light I started making videos with, I borrowed it from my friend. She just had a ring light and she wasn't using it as much. So I would borrow it every day, return it to her. That time I was doing 30 days. I would borrow it, return it to her. So after like the second week, she was like, oh, you're using this thing more than me. Just keep it. So
So I kept it. I was using it once in a while when she needed it, she'll ask for it back. But I used that ring light till 2020. And it was borrowed. I'm not going to tell anybody. Do you understand? So when I say it now that ask if you feel like you don't have, ask somebody. Use what you have. People feel like easy for you to say you have an iPhone, you're an influencer, you have 30,000 followers. But this has always been how I thought about content, and life. Like, use what you have. You want to make a video, you want to put it out, and you want it to be like MKBHD. Who are you kidding? Like, you release your first video and you want it to have 10,000 views. Who are you? Nobody cares. Jenna, like, literally nobody cares. When I was making those videos on my, that I used to post on my stories, I used to get 20-something, 30-something people watch it. And I'll be honest with you guys here, I did not care because I just genuinely enjoyed making those videos. So it's so important to, like, enjoy what you do so that there's a certain level of satisfaction you get from the creative process. So you don't need it so much from the validation after. So in case the validation doesn't come, you were satisfied from, like, the creation of it. Like, I remember times when I'll be watching my videos, still happens. Like, I'm watching my video, I'm editing, and I'm, like, laughing. And my siblings are like, what's wrong? I'm like, this video is so good. And I'm cracking up to my own content. That's why I said I think I'm funny. I'm funny. And, that was it, because I legitimately enjoyed the process of, like, simplifying ideas and knowing, like, before even putting out the video, like, knowing that this is actually going to help someone in real life. That was where I got the satisfaction from. And I'll be lying if I said the validation is not nice. It's very nice to see people in your comment section, fire emoji. It's nice, Jigger, but, like, there's so much more to it for me than all of that. I feel like I just talked too much.
No, it's good. It's good. Speaking about your content, what content can you remember that you put out that you just said, I'm just going to post this, it's not going to bang, and it bang? Then, which one did you like, this is going to be fire? Two questions, you understand? So which one did you put out and, like, everybody's hating and you're like, what? Then the other one, which one, like, I'm sure this will trend, like, all the blogs will pick it up, and crickets. So, if you can remember.
Yeah, I've had a couple of those. Like, every now and then, social media will shock me.
Yeah.
Right? It just keeps happening. But I think there's a post where I made, like, a carousel post. You know those posts where you post one and there are slides? First page was how to make it with working. And then all the slides were, like, empty. So that was supposed to be the joke, right? And that day, the idea just hit me. Normally, I plan my content, but that day, it just hit me. I'm like, I opened my phone, I created the post, and I posted it. Then I dropped my phone. And then I came back, like, 15 minutes later, and saw almost 200 comments. I'm like, are these people mad? This thing literally has no words. What is this? And I had been creating other pieces of content that were, like, really valuable and resourceful and full. And but that one, everybody was just kicking in the comment section. Shocking. Then there's this other video I made. The title was Why So Deep? And basically that video was like dragging everybody that's always unnecessarily deep and complicated in their messages. Or who has time? Who wants to burn mental calories? So I was so sure that video would, like, bang, and I just posted, it's like everybody was angry. And it was just basic. And I think I've had that over and over and over again. There's some videos I did last week. I don't remember the title, but I did part one and two. I can't remember. But I didn't think it was going to do so well because it was just, I was just talking, why you should post content even if you don't like it. And I posted a video and everybody's like, oh my God, I needed this. To be honest, like, that thing cracks me up. Because I was just there, like, you needed what? Like, this thing. But I guess that has taught me that I am, in a lot of ways, I'm a poor judge of what my audience needs to hear from me. And you probably are too. right? So there's something my manager will always push me to do. Like when he says, oh, let's do an event, I'm like, ah, people won't come. It's like, see them, everybody's not you. You're thinking about them. They are not you. So there's a sense in which you're not perceiving your own value, but people are. There's a sense in which you're not validating yourself. And you're never going to find out what's really happening unless you put yourself out there. Charge. You're not going to know how much you can charge until you actually charge. So it's a risk, but it's worth it because money is nice.
Yeah. So I hope you guys are learning. Do not type, I needed this on Salem's post. He's definitely laughing at you. Okay, so I want to speak on your relationship with Daniel. Daniel Amberson is Salem's manager. And you guys, like, at least I've known you guys for 2-3 years together. And I've been seeing that same dynamic with creators or creatives and business people. Another example is Aproko Doctor and his manager, Daniel Emeka. You know, as a creative as well, or a creative entrepreneur, I had to learn about business a lot. I have an MBA. I learned more about business, doing business, than the 18 months doing MBA. I can't remember anything from my MBA. But I find that a lot of creatives that want to transition from just being creative and birthing stuff, that want to make a living out of it. We don't know a lot. We have poor financial literacy. You know, we don't know much about anything. So people like Daniel that enjoy these things, you know, how did you come to that place where, oh, I need help, or I can't do this alone? You understand? And what, if you can share, you know, what is happening between both of you?
Of course. So I think I always knew I was going to need at some point, but I thought I was going to have to learn. I thought I was going to have to, at some point, learn. Because this whole influencer, content creator thing, I wasn't trying to be an influencer. I just said, oh, I like to put my thoughts out there. I'm going to do it every day for 30 days straight. My account started to grow, blew up 1.5 to 10K in 6 months. And then from there, and then one time a brand reached out and says, oh, how much do you charge for this? I'm like, charge? Wait, like charge? Right? And then I realized, oh, I'm sitting on money. Okay. Let's take this seriously. And then I talked to some other content creator friends of mine. I'm like, okay, how do you people do this thing? I know Sabi. And then I just started to go from there. And at some point, I started to talk to Swish. I now have a business relationship with them, but they've always been a supporter since back then. So I was talking to the CEO of Swish one day, and he's like, Salem, you need a manager. I'm like, manager, how much am I making? Like, where will I pay the manager? And he said, no, you're thinking, when I say you need a manager, I'm not saying you need like a record label type thing. I'm saying, do you have any friend that, you know, you've known for a while, that you trust and is good with business and wants to see you win? And immediately my mind went to Daniel, because I've known Daniel since SS1, and Daniel is that guy, right? Daniel is the guy you ask what do you do, and he can't really tell you, but like, he makes things happen. That's what he does. And so I hit Daniel up. I'm like, Daniel, this is where I am with everything. Will you be my manager? Says, let me think about it. And then when Daniel was coming back to me to tell me yes, Daniel came with a contract. I'm like, okay. This guy is serious. I'm like, ah, which contract? We're friends now, we're guys now. Why? He's like, no, this is how we're going to do this. This is, you know, we're friends, but this is business, and this is a way for us to also protect our friendship. We have to work together in this way. I'm like, okay, I made the right choice. Thank God. Because me, I wasn't even thinking contract, you know. And having Daniel has helped me, you know, think more business-minded. But now we have this type of good cop, bad cop thing going. So recently somebody asked me, if you why do you work with a manager? Does that not mean you make less? I'm like, no. Here's what working with a manager does for me. So, for example, if I work alone and I'm able to make 100 naira, because what I'm good at is video creation, storytelling, content strategy, personal branding, negotiation, I'm a nice guy. You get? So that's not one of my biggest skills. Writing proposals, back and forth, you know, with corporate and stuff, not my biggest skills. I'll start to freak out. Right, so when me and Daniel started working together, so back to my explanation, sorry about that. So if by myself I make 100 naira, when I work with a manager, he's working with a manager increases my value because he's able to communicate my value in a way that I cannot. There's something we had a fight, not fight, but something he used to quarrel me about. Like when I would talk to a client and tell them what we're going to do for them, I used to make it look too easy because it was easy for me, right? Like everything I did, it comes naturally to me. So I'll just talk about it like it's... Because I'm actually going to have fun doing it. But Daniel is like, we can't let them know you are having fun doing it. We're going to let them know you are working your butt off. Which in reality, it's a lot of work. But because it comes naturally to me, I'm just happy like a cartoon. But Daniel is like, no, we have to communicate, you know, how much we're doing. This is how we're working. And also, Daniel is like the front guy that will fight with you. This is my client. Not do this. My client. And when he talks to you like that, you're suddenly more, this guy that has manager. There's no pricing. There's no telling price that will be insulting. You know, so all of that works in my favor. If I'm making 100 naira with a manager, I'm able to make 300 naira. So if I'm working by myself, the 100 naira I make, I keep all of it. If I'm working with a manager and we make 300, he gets a percentage of it, I get another percentage. But the percentage I get is more than 100 naira. Do you understand? So it's just nice. Nice was not a very good way to put it. But like when somebody reaches out to me for work, I'm like, oh, thank you so much for reaching out to me. Please speak to my manager. All of a sudden, my reps have gone up like this. Like people are just more, you're just like, oh, okay. I don't expect influencers to be professional, to be organized, or to like take business really seriously. And having Daniel helped me to take this as a business. Like he told me when we're going to start working, he said, I have one job to make sure that if any day you wake up and you cannot create anymore, you're okay. And that you're everything is working out business wise, you're okay. And we're not there yet, you know, we're still working, we're still building, we're still, but I see us getting there, and I would not have gotten there by myself, you know, because negotiation, financial management, all of that, I'm not the best. But these are things that come naturally to him. Like he likes to start projects and finish them. Me, I like to have ideas, you know. So I just share these ideas with him. He will run with them. He will carry them out. He will call the people that need to be called, follow up on people that need to be followed up on, bully the people that need to be bullied. Me, once you bully me, I'm just like, sorry now. Let's, you know, but he's always there to like, yeah. So that's the relationship we have right now. It's not, I don't have a manager because I have blown. I have a manager because we both find value in the work that I do, and it helps him, it helps me, you know. Or and because of the work that me and him are doing together, he's doing more work now, you know, like managing other people. He's not managing anybody on the level that he's managing me, but he's like doing his consulting, doing events for people. He'll say, oh, I did this for Salem, and you're like, oh, you're the guy that did this, you must be able to do this. So it's mutually beneficial for us both, and it works. Yeah,
love it. I always enjoy speaking to Daniel, honestly. Is there any person that you are currently enjoying their content, be it podcasts, videos, just blog posts, but you're just like really enjoying home and abroad? Anybody?
This is going to be weird, but Dave Chappelle, okay. He's a stand-up comedian, yeah. And I appreciate the way he sees the world. Mm-hmm. and how that he's able to infuse so many things into his comedy. So for me now, I'm a content creator, and that's what everybody thinks I am. And I'm fine with that. But I'm a lot of other things. And I may not come out and say I'm a this and a this and a that, but behind the scenes, I'm investing in all these parts of myself that now make me to be a more wholesome content creator when I'm out there, because my content is built on the wealth of all this knowledge and experience and things that I consume. I think I get that from Dave Chappelle. So he does comedy, stand-up comedy, and he'll make you laugh and all, but there's like stuff about social justice in the comedy. There's stuff about racial justice. He's standing up for so many so many factors and all. I just love how he communicates, basically, and how that he ties a story around. And he's still a comedian, and comedians are supposed to be jokers, but Dave Chappelle is anything but a joker. So yeah,
just Dave.
Okay, now you're going to make me pull out the list.
Just
two more. Seth Godin.
Okay.
I think I quoted him like twice, so
yeah,
I've given myself away. Yeah. Who else?
Even if it's just for entertainment.
Josh Too Funny. I think I really like.
That's
Josh
my guy. Like, I love him.
Yeah, I love him.
I love Josh, honestly. I think also just thinking about Josh, I don't know if he knows how brilliant he is. The cast of characters that he's able to churn out, from my favorite Juga to Tunde Tupac to all the guys that come out for the auditions, you know. But my favorite is definitely Tunde Tupac and Juga. The character of Juga is so brilliantly. Sorry, I know this is about you, but like Juga is so brilliant. I don't know, because we all know a Juga. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? We all know someone that lies, like blows. We all know someone, and he finds a way. How will you say Joe Biden's name is John Opiti? Anyway, like he grew up on your street. Okay. Josh Too Funny, Selen King. So, okay, what are you going to say?
Something, yeah, I mean, I like the way like he's constantly evolving.
Yes.
And he's constantly creating new characters. It's like he's challenging himself. He's at this stage in his career where he can just decide to do the same thing every day and people would still watch. But he's an actual... Oh my gosh, Basket Mouth.
Okay, yeah.
I have to add that one.
Would you say he's our Dave Chappelle?
Yes. Except... Yes.
Kind of.
Yes, on so many levels. But he's like his Basket Mouth.
Yes.
You know, Basket Mouth has about two shows running at the same DSTV. Then he has like a number of YouTube series going on. He recently released an album. He's having live shows. Like, and then he has this satire series that he's been doing. He's just the actual definition of a creative, yeah. Like a creative genius. And for each of them, he has sponsors like Godwin.
Yeah.
You know, like there's Malta Guinness, there's every project he's working on, he has sponsors, and he's just constantly putting out stuff. He's working like he's upcoming.
And Basket Mouth and Josh actually explain the Madman effect. Because if you guys can remember, All My Guys Are Ballers, it got viral the second time. Got, well, should I say verification? Viral. It got viral globally. The second time, 2 years after he actually made that content. Like NBA players were making content with All My Guys Are Ballers. Russia! Do you understand? So that idea of just keep putting out stuff, you don't know what will blow.
Yeah, you don't know. And the beautiful thing is, like, you can't use up creativity. Like, the more creative ideas you execute, the more creative ideas you will have.
Because like, I go on somebody like Lassie's page. You remember the way he blew up that first time?
Yeah.
It was like, that time he did that little pothole, yeah, swerving. So, and I was just looking at this guy, like, this guy is going to run out of stuff to talk about. I said it. Like, I was so sure it wasn't sustainable. Like, the whole big mouth thing. You know, like, he will run out. And this guy has been going for like 2 years. How does he come up with all this stuff? But I now realize that the more creative ideas you execute, the more, like, and every now and then, you're going to put out a piece of content that nobody's going to care about. But there'll be like some of them, as you just keep posting. Apart from All My Guys Are Ballers, Josh Tufoni also had Don't Leave Me Challenge. It was global.
Yeah.
Like every, I mean, the white people spoiled it. But it was global, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, do you know, I have this idea where I myself, if I have funding, I want to see Juga spending and what are your names? Spending Sinzu, not Anayo, like, but like spending Sinzu, Juga, like in the same scene. I that would be crazy. Anyway, let's move on. So we'll soon start asking Salem questions, but I just really want us to talk about community building. Lastly, the difference between audience and NFT. My theory is, or what I tell people is, think of it as a village, right? When you're building a community, it's a village is a group of people that have shared values, shared vision, shared interests, right? And whoever is leading seeks to provide value for the entire village, for the entire community. So businesses, brands, creators should think of not building followers, you know, but communities where they are providing value for them. So can you just speak a little bit about that community building? Then we start asking questions.
Yeah. So this is one of the most interesting things I learned on the journey of becoming a creator and an influencer. Constantly learning and like recording everything I've learned. And community was the thing that really blew my mind. So every now and then, when I put up a post on Instagram, I always include a call to action. Like, at the end, I'll ask something like, oh, these are my thoughts, yada, yada, yada. What are your own thoughts? And then that gets people talking, right? So there was this day when I didn't type a long caption. All I wrote was, what's bothering you? That was the caption. And then people started to reply. My plan was, once people started to tell me what was bothering them, I would, you know, like encourage them and tell them, oh, you got this and stuff. But it's like I just give everybody microphone. Like a few minutes, there were hundreds of comments. And just going through the problems, I became overwhelmed myself. Like, Jesus, where do I start from? Who sent me what? I don't want to know what's bothering me. Like, let's... But it was too late. And I just put my phone away. And then when I picked up my phone a little later, I saw that members of my community were replying themselves. Like, it was happening organically. I didn't ask anybody to do anything. The only thing I said was, what's bothering you? I saw that other people were going through the comment section and responding to people and encouraging them and telling them, oh, this is your problem. Send me a DM. Oh, this is, do this. And they were like, they were helping each other, and I was just there. So that was the first time I kind of came to terms with the fact that, like, maybe it's the catalyst. Maybe this isn't even about me. I'm just the guy that creates the atmosphere, and then people can just function. They're sort of like campfire. And I now... You can clap for me. Yeah. Okay, that's enough. So, that's when I realized, you know, kind of emphasize something that I had learned before, and it's the fact that community is a survival need. Like, it's deep.
You're so right. I want us to use NSALS as a case study, because individualism has been preached to the world that you are on your own, you can make it by yourself, we can, do you understand? Then what we saw, like, because I was already theorizing about community building as a village, build a village for like a year, but I'd never really, but what ends has made me see was, I don't know if you're here, you're a pro or for, I'm just using what happened as a case study. We saw young Nigerians gather, regardless of their faith, ethnicity, and age, and for 2 weeks, they moved the needle. I ate shawarma at the protest ground. I don't know who was at the beggar. Thank you, shawarma. Honestly, can protest police brutality. And we ate shawarma. We ate shawarma. And you know, there was we saw that happen. And unfortunately, you know, what happened on 20th October kind of like dashed dreams and hopes of many people. But for me, I saw that honestly as a catalyst to even do more. Like, we should go and build our own villages. So like, here, how can we encourage one another? The truth is, not all of us will japa. Not all of us, they'll bounce some of you. Do you understand?
I think God forbid.
Yeah, but it's the truth. You understand? But all for those of us or those of you that have decided to, oh, I'm going to stay in Nigeria and make things. How do we move the needle? How do we make progress? So, you know, community building, individualism is a lie of the devil. Do you understand? We exist in communities. We grow in communities. So I just wanted to point that out and use NSALS as a case study.
Yeah, and like, this isn't like, it's not new knowledge. Like, there's old research that shows that this is communities actually a survival need. I don't know if you guys have ever heard about Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Basically, he lines up human needs based on their importance for our survival. Basically, these are needs that if you don't have, it reduces the chances that you want to be alive if you don't die. So the first on the list is physiological needs, which is food, water, and stuff. The second is safety needs, to know that safety and security, to know that, you know, you have a place to live, you have covering and stuff. The third, there's five needs. Third, Google the remaining two. The third is on that list is community, a sense of belonging that we get from family, from friends, or romantic relationships. Everybody needs that. Beautiful thing is, now social media is now that village in a lot of ways. It's the reason why you see somebody you follow talk about something they struggle with, and because of that you follow them, because of how strongly the story resonates with you. I don't think we realize how strong it is, the concept of following somebody. It's like you see one post from somebody, and because of how much you resonate with that one thing they say, you follow them, you subscribe to everything they will say in the future. You don't even know what they are going to say. It's a big deal, right? And all of that because you resonated with something. So like, community is a survival need, and if you're building a business or building a following or a creator, it's important to take into account the fact that there's a certain validation or connection that people are not finding in their families or in their, you know, wherever they hang out, that they're finding on your page. That was one of the weirdest things for me. Like, I stopped taking it for granted when people would DM me or something, because I was serious for them. It was not just a joke. They were finding connection, they were finding community, they were finding a sense of belonging, especially in the creative space. If you're in Nigeria and you're creative, there's a huge chance your parents do not like that you are a creative, right? Like, they sent me job link. They still sent me job link like weeks ago. NNPC is hiring. You know, and because they still feel like what you have is not a real job and you need to get a real job. And on some level, they are trying to protect you. But It's important to now spend time with people that see your value and are not trying to change you. People who see what you have and who nurture it and who point it out and emphasize your strengths, right? And that's where communities of survival need. Otherwise, your creativity will die. Your willingness to pursue the things that make you happy will die if you're spending, you know, all this time with people who don't see. So community is really important. When you are, I think I should also answer this. I feel like some people might have the question, like, how do I build a community? Every time someone asks me that question, the first thing I say is, join a community. Don't build a community. Join a community. When you need to build a community, you know. And community building is not opening WhatsApp group and putting people inside. Because that's what people think. Don't be like, oh, I want to create a community. I'm like, that's not how it works. Communities come around impact, not intentions, right? So it's after you've impacted a lot of people, like found ways, and it's beautiful because you join a community. While you're in that community, you can begin to impact people, right? To become the most resourceful person, and you're just the guy that everybody knows to ask when they need help or something. From there, you understand how communities work. You function within a community yourself. I'll always give credit to a community that helped me in my early stages, Everything Now Art. I don't know if you guys know, please check out Everything Now Art or Tribe Called ENA. That really helped me early stages of my journey. That's where I met a lot of the creators that I still have a connection with, you know, even now. So my community has become that for some people, and I hope that they go ahead to build their own communities. And yeah.
Awesome. Can we just appreciate Salem?
Amazing episode. I loved hearing Salem share his heart and his passion, and I hope you enjoyed it too. If you did, can you consider subscribing, giving us a positive rating, and also sharing with your friends so that you can get more content like this from the Fireworks Podcast. Every Friday, I host free workshops on my website, jessedanyusuf.co. You can go and register for the Fire Workshop. I host every Friday free workshops teaching on the business of creativity, business storytelling, and personal branding. If you want to reach out to me, you can send an email to hello@fireworks.com.ng, and I'll be glad to hear from you. All right, see you next Friday. Remember, have an amazing weekend. God bless.